And through World Roots, broadcast a diverse range of sessions, new releases from the region, and material from the BBC archive. In this week's World Roots, I'll be announcing details of the 2011 World Roots Academy. I can tell you now that we'll be focusing on South India, but tune in at 3 to meet, for the first time, the 2011 World Roots Academy protégé. That's World Roots today at 3 with me, Lucy Duran, here on BBC Radio 3.
BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio and online. It's just gone 1 o'clock. Time for the news now, read by Lupa Qatari.
Police in Dubai say a package intercepted on its way to America contained explosives and an electrical circuit linked to a mobile phone SIM card. In a statement, they said the device was prepared in a professional manner and bore the hallmarks of a terrorist group such as Al-Qaeda. A second package containing explosives was found at East Midlands Airport near Nottingham. It's not yet clear whether it was a viable bomb. Both parcels had been originally sent from Yemen and were addressed to synagogues in Chicago. The government's Cobra Committee has been meeting this morning to discuss the incident. The Home Secretary, Theresa May, who's chairing the meeting, has said that security for cargo flights is being urgently reviewed. People who volunteer to help the elderly or disabled could earn time credits, which they can redeem for their own care in later life, under plans being considered by the government. A similar scheme already operates in Japan. Charities have welcomed moves to get more people volunteering, but say care in old age is a right, not a reward. NATO says it's killed at least 30 Taliban militants in Afghanistan. 5 coalition soldiers were wounded in the fighting in a remote region close to the border with Pakistan. BT has restored its broadband service to more than 20,000 homes in Northern Ireland, parts of Scotland and the north of England. BT said engineers had fixed a fault overnight at its Edinburgh exchange. 2 Pakistan cricketers accused of spot-fixing during a test match against England have begun appeals against their suspensions. Salman Butt and Mohammed Amir are appearing before an ICC hearing in Dubai. They deny being part of a betting scam in which no balls would be bowled at pre-arranged times. And the weather, sunshine with occasional showers for most, particularly in western parts, with some perhaps turning thundery at times. More persistent rain and strong winds should arrive in the far southwest towards the evening, with gales in the far north easing later. And that's the latest at BBC News at coming up to 3 minutes past one.
And it was read by Lupa Qatari. Well, time now on Radio 3 to join Lucy Skeeping for the early music show today, celebrating the 350th anniversary of a certain diary.
Sunday, 1st of January, 1660. Blessed be God, at the end of the last year I was in very good health, without any sense of my old pain, but upon taking of cold. I lived in Axe Yard, having my wife and servant Jane, and no more in family than us three. My wife gave me hopes of her being with child, but on the last day of the year, the hope was belied.
So began Samuel Pepys' first entry in his famous diary, which he started 350 years ago this year. It's an entry tinged with sadness. His wife was never to produce the child he longed for, and I wonder if it was partly this sense of emptiness that not only made him record some of his most intimate thoughts, but also gave rise to his overwhelming passion, music. "The thing of the world I love the most," he called it. Pepys was one of the most important civil servants of his age, and the diary is a wonderful resource for anyone wanting to know about life in 17th century England. But it also gives us some fascinating information about Pepys's cultural world, the art and the music of the time. Pepys was a keen amateur musician. He even tried his hand at composition, and because of his social standing, he was able to mix with some of the very finest composers of the day. So in today's programme, with the help of his own words, we're going to explore Pepys' musical life. Like most enthusiasts, Pepys got a lot of satisfaction from sharing his love of music. He even arranged music lessons for his servants. He taught his wife to sing, and he paid for her to take dancing lessons, which led to some serious bouts of quarrelling when he suspected she was having an affair with the dancing master. And talking of the dancing master, one musical figure who gets quite a number of mentions in the diary is the publisher John Playford, who produced that great compendium of popular dance tunes entitled The English Dancing Master, along with numerous songbooks that contained many of the rounds and catches that were so popular in the Pepys household.
Friday, 23rd of November, 1666. After dinner to my chamber with Creed, who come and dined with me, and by and by comes in at Colonel Atkins, the fellow I hate, and so I think all the world else do. In the evening, to be rid of him, I took coach and saw him to the Temple and there light. And he being gone, with all the haste back again and to my chamber late to enter all this day's matters of account, and to draw up my report to my Lord Treasurer, and so to bed. At the Temple I called at Playford's, and there find that his new impression of his catches are not yet out, the fire having hindered it. But his man tells me that it will be a very fine piece, many things new being added to it.
Drink tonight to the moonshine bright, and mark upon her border some rites to be done to Phoebus the sun in trim and comely order.
Drink tonight to the moonshine bright, and mark upon her border some rites to be done for Phoebus the sun in trim and comely order. Drink that the beer of the priest of the year with the censer's bill of
thank you.
Music from the time of Samuel Pepys. First, the New York Catch Club with Drink Tonight, one of many catches, we might now call them rounds, published by Playford in the mid-17th century. Then came Cockle Shells, a country dance from Playford's Dancing Master. As well as singing himself, Pepys also played the lute, the viol, the violin, recorder and the spinet to varying degrees of proficiency, playing for pleasure at home, for his friends, in coffee houses and even at Westminster Abbey. But funnily enough, the instrument that gets the most mentions in the diary is the humble flageolet, a sort of simplified recorder-like instrument which Samuel tells us he and his wife both learnt to play.
Monday, 16th of January, 1660. In the morning I went up to Mr. Cruise, and at his bedside he gave me direction to go tomorrow with Mr. Edward to Twickenham, and likewise did talk to me concerning things of state. I went from thence, and in my way went into an alehouse and drank my morning draught with Matthew Andrews and two or three more of his friends, coachmen, and of one of them I did hire a coach to carry us tomorrow to Twickenham. From thence to my office, where nothing to do. At noon Harry Ethel came to me, and we went to the clerk's, where we came a little too late, but in a closet we had a very good dinner by Mr. Pinkney's courtesy, and after dinner we had pretty good singing, and one, Hazard, sung alone after the old fashion, which was very much cried up, but I did not like it. Thence we went to the Green Dragon on Lambeth Hill, both the Mr. Pinkneys, Smith, Harrison, Morris, that sang the bass, Shepley and I, and there we sang all sorts of things, and I ventured with good success upon Things at First Sight. And after that I played on my flageolet, and stayed there till 9 o'clock, very merry and drawn on with one song after another, till it came to be so late. After that, Shepley, Harrison and myself, we went towards Westminster on foot, and at the Golden Lion, near Charing Cross, we went in and drank a pint of wine, and so parted, and thence home, where I found my wife and maid a-washing. I stayed up till the bellman came by with his bell just under my window as I was writing of this very line, and cried, "Past 1 of the clock, and a cold, frosty, windy morning." I then went to bed, and left my wife and the maid a-washing still.
Dance tune Green Stockings, performed by the City Waits. One thing Pepys' diary makes very clear is just how much domestic music making there was in his social circle. This was a time when most middle-class people could turn their hand to playing an instrument or singing at sight. In fact, it was also the period when the very first public concerts took place, giving anyone who could afford the small entry fee a chance to hear a broad range of live music and, like Pepys, to form their own opinion of it. Apart from the flageolet, over 20 instruments are named in the diary, some familiar, like the flute, lute, bagpipe, harp, guitar, trumpet, viol or violin, and some perhaps a little less well-known today, such as the guitar-like metal-strung bandora, or the angelica, a sort of hybrid plucked instrument, something between a harp and a lute, or the Jew's or Jaw's harp, which produced its sound by being twanged inside the mouth. In addition, Pepys also mentions numerous keyboard instruments, from the clavi-organum and harpsichord to the organ, spinet and virginals, which, with its compact case and gentle tone, was ideally suited to the closely packed townhouses of the 17th century. Also hugely valuable to musicians exploring English music of this period are Pepys's references to particular songs. He mentions 11 of them in all, by name, that he heard performed or particularly enjoyed, or even sung himself with his friends. We'll hear Emma Kirkby perform one of them in a moment, "At Dead Low Ebb," it's called, by Henry Lawes, in which a young woman wandering in the dark forest comes across Cupid and has her heart broken.
Friday, 12th of April, 1667. Up, and when ready, and to my office, to do a little business. I close at my office all the afternoon, getting off of my hand my papers, which, by the late holidays and my laziness, were grown too many upon my hands, to my great trouble, and therefore at it as late as my eyes would give me leave, and then by water down to Redriff, meaning to meet my wife, who is gone with Mercer, Barker, and the boy, it being most sweet weather, to walk. And I did meet with them, and walked back, and then by the time we got home it was dark, and we stayed singing in the garden till supper was ready, and there with great pleasure. But I tried my girls Mercer and Barker singly one after another, a single song, "At Dead Low Ebb," and I do clearly find that as to manner of singing the latter do much the better, the other thinking herself, as I do myself, above taking pains for a manner of singing, contenting ourselves with the judgment and goodness of ear. So to supper, and then parted unto bed.
Amanda McCurkby and Anthony Rooley with Henry Lawes's song At Dead Low Ebb of Night. Samuel Pepys seems to have loved artful songs like that, and Lawes was one of the establishment's most respected composers, a gentleman of the Chapel Royal and collaborator with his friend the poet Milton in court masks. But this was an age when there was perhaps a little less differentiation between popular or so-called serious or classical genres. And Pepys also very much enjoyed traditional and folk music too. In fact, he amassed one of the most important collections of ballads in existence today, some 1,700 broadside ballads, penny song sheets bought from street peddlers and heard in the taverns and fairs throughout the land. It's a wonderful collection, which I had the privilege of leafing through not long ago while sitting at Pepys' very own writing desk. Of course, many of the ballads were lost, used in their time as draft excluders, bookliners, even loo paper. Others have survived in revised versions suitable for the Victorian nursery. But I expect many of you will be familiar with the lovely ballad that begins in Scarlet Town, where I was born. Ring any bells? From your school days, perhaps. Yes, it's Barbara Allen. And how interesting to learn that the apparently fictitious Scarlet Town is now thought by some to be the city of Reading, a play on the colour red. And there's more in it to explore. Barbara, or Barbary Allen, was the pen name of Mrs. Elizabeth Knipp, an actress, singer and dancer in the King's Company, who was a friend of Pepys. Actually, a bit more than just a friend. She was married to a horse dealer, and in 1668 she was twice arrested for misdemeanours at the Theatre Royal, although we don't quite know exactly what she had got up to. The words and tune for Barbara Allen only appeared in print in the mid-18th century, but thanks to Pepys' diary, we know that the song was already a popular favourite a century before. And from what he tells us, it was the naughty Mrs. Knipp herself who taught it to him.
Tuesday, 2nd of January, 1666. Up by candlelight again, and wrote the greatest part of my business fair, and then to the office, and so home to dinner. And after dinner up and made an end of my fair writing it, and that being done, to my Lord Brunker's, and there find Sir J. Minns and all his company, and Mr. Borman and Mrs. Turner, but, above all, my dear Mrs. Knipp, with whom I sang, and in perfect pleasure I was to hear her sing, and especially her little Scotch song of Barbary Allen.
In Scarlet Town, where I was born, there was a fair dwelling, made every youth cry well-a-day. Her name was Barbara Allen. All in the merry month of May, when green that day was swelling, grove on his deathbed lay, for love of Barbara Allen. So slowly, slowly she came up, and slowly she came nigh him, and all she said when there she young man, I think you're dying. When he was dead and laid in grave, her heart was struck with sorrow. Oh, mother, mother, make my bed, for I shall said, ye virgins all, and shun the fault I fell in. Henceforth take warning by the fall of cruel Barbara Allen.
The distinctive voice of the late Alfred Deller, one of the first to revive the art of the countertenor in modern times. You're listening to The Early Music Show here on Radio 3 with me, Lucy Skeeping. And in this 350th anniversary year of the start of his famous diary, we're exploring Samuel Pepys' musical world. So often, composers we feature on the show can seem rather shady figures, just a name printed alongside a piece of music or cropping up perhaps in an accounts ledger of some grand patron. So it is exciting to find some familiar musical names mentioned in Pepys' diary as his own personal friends, as people that he knew quite well, even people that he made music with himself. There's a whole host of them. Richard Dering, the Queen's organist, Christopher Gibbons, organist at the Royal Chapel, the madrigalist Thomas Morley, hymn composer Thomas Ravenscroft, and John Bannister, director of the King's Violin Band, to name but a few. Even Purcell Sr. gets a look in, Henry's father, of course. And Pepys also gives a passing name check to Matthew Locke, the celebrated theatre composer and court musician to Charles II, whose music, A Consort of Viols, we'll hear in a moment.
Monday, 1st of September, 1662. Up betimes at my lodging and to my office and among my workmen, and then with Sir W. Batten and Sir W. Penn by coach to St. James, this being the first day of our meeting there by the Duke's order. But when we come, we found him going out by coach with his Duchess, and he told us he was to go abroad with the Queen today, to Durden's, it seems, to dine with my Lord Berkeley, where I have been very merry when I was a little boy. So we went and stayed a little at Mr. Coventry's chamber, and I to my Lord Sandwich's, who is gone to wait upon the King and Queen today. And so Mr. Paget being there, Will Howe and I and he played over some things of Locke's that we used to play at sea, that pleased us three well, it being the first music I have heard a great while, so much as my business of late taken me off from all my former delights.
Thank you.
A lively saraband ending the four movements of Suite No. 1 in D minor, a viol consort by Matthew Locke, performed there by Hesperion 20. Another composer mentioned quite frequently in the diary is the first ever Master of the King's Music, Nicholas Lanier. By the 1660s, when Pepys was writing the diary, Lanier had already spent more than 30 years in close contact with the royal family. In fact, the 17th century commentator Roger North tells how Charles I would sometimes rest the royal hand on Lanier's shoulder as he sung to him. But what gave Lanier an even higher profile was his great knowledge of painting. And as a trusted courtier and connoisseur, he was sent off to Italy to buy pictures for the royal household. He also spent some time in France and in the Low Countries. And his music, in particular his often rather Italianate songs, would have been of special interest to Pepys, who was constantly on the lookout for tips as to how to improve his own songwriting efforts. Undoubtedly, Lanier's travel experiences, his broad knowledge of the arts, and of course any gossip he might just let out about the royals would have made him an irresistible dinner guest.
Monday, 30th of October, 1665. Up and to my office about business. At noon to dinner, and after some discourse of music, he and I to the office a while, and he to get Mr. Coleman, if he can, against night. By and by I back again home, and there find him returned with Mr. Coleman, his wife being ill, and Mr. Lanier, with whom with their lute we had excellent company and good singing till midnight, and a good supper I did give them. But Coleman's voice is quite spoiled, and when he begins to be drunk he is excellent company, but afterward troublesome and impertinent. Lanier sings in a melancholy method very well, and a sober man he seems to be.
A song by Nicholas Lanier, performed by Julia Gooding with Christopher Wilson on the lute. But Samuel Pepys didn't just mention English composers in his diary. From time to time, he refers in passing to some of the great continental masters as well, like the celebrated church musician from Rome, Giacomo Carissimi, whose music evidently rather impressed Pepys, as we'll hear in the next diary extract. And we'll also hear one of Carissimi's delightful, if rather mournful, duets, Il mio cor, My Heart is a Sea of Tears, where instead of the sirens, woe sings its sad lament. First, though, a short divertissement by Lully, a composer whom Pepys, with characteristic honesty, rather dismisses, along with French music in general. Impartially, he writes, I do not find any goodness in their airs, though very good, beyond ours when played by the same hand. ¶¶
Friday, 22nd of July, 1664. Up and to my office, where busy all the morning. At noon to the change, and so home to dinner, and then down by water to Deptford, where, coming too soon, I spent an hour in looking round the yard, and putting Mr. Sheesh to measure a piece or two of timber, which he did most cruelly wrong, and to the King's loss 12 or 13 shillings in a piece of 28 feet in contents. Thence to the clerk of the checks, from whose house Mr. Falconer was buried today. Sir J. Minns and I, the only principal officers that were there. We walked to church with him, and then I left them without staying the sermon, and straight home by water, and there I find, as I expected, Mr. Hill and Andrews, and one slovenly and ugly fellow, Signor Pedro, who sings Italian songs to the theorbo most neatly, and they spent the whole evening in singing the best piece of music counted of all hands in the world, made by Signor Carissimi, the famous master in Rome. Fine it was, indeed, and too fine for me to judge of.
Thank you.
song by Carissimi, Il Mio Cor, performed by Agnès Mellon and René Jacob with concerto vocale. And before that, Capriccio Stravagante gave us a lively air for Demons and Monsters by Lully, the sort of thing that would have been heard at Versailles as part of a theatrical spectacle. Well, time's almost up, but we can't end this little exploration of the musical world of Samuel Pepys without hearing one of his own efforts as a composer. Actually, Pepys often found composing a bit difficult and a frustrating business. He frequently asked for help from his musical friends, and even when he did manage to get a melody of sorts, he often had trouble getting the harmonies to work. Nevertheless, he seems to have been truly delighted with his song Beauty Retire, a setting of words from one of his favourite musical plays, William Davenant's The Siege of Rhodes. Having wrestled over it for many months, when it was finished, he got the actress Mrs. Knipp to sing it to his friends. Indeed, so proud of it was he that in his famous portrait by John Hales, he's actually painted holding the score.
Friday, 9th of November, 1666. Away by coach to Mrs. Pierce's by appointment, where we find good company, a fair lady, my lady Prettyman, Mrs. Corbett, Knipp, and for men, Captain Downing, Mr. Lloyd, Sir W. Coventry's clerk, and one Mr. Tripp, who dances well. After some trifling discourse, we to dancing, and very good sport, and mightily pleased I was with the company. After our first bout of dancing, Knipp and I to sing, and Mercer and Captain Downing, who loves and understands music, would by all means have my song of Beauty Retire, which Knipp had spread abroad, and he extols it above anything he ever heard, and, without flattery, I know it is good in its kind.
Beauty, retire, thou dost my pity move. Believe my pity, and then trust my love. At first I thought her by our prophet sent, as a reward for valor's toils, more worth than all my father's spoils. But now she is become my punishment. But thou art just, O power divine, with new and painful arts of studied war, I break the hearts of half the world, and she breaks mine.
Beauty Retire, Samuel Pepys' own composition, performed there by Richard Wistreich and lutenist Robin Jeffrey. Pepys's diary covers less than a decade of his life, but it was a decade of great innovation in a rapidly changing world. In musical terms, the Restoration had introduced new styles from the continent that challenged the cultural insularity of the Commonwealth, and Pepys commented on all this as well as giving us some of his most intimate thoughts. He managed to put real flesh and blood onto the bones of some of the great composers of the time, and he offers us a tantalising glimpse into the homes and concert rooms where their music was heard. But to Pepys, music wasn't just a pleasant pastime. It was also an art of great significance, something that could change lives and affect everyone who heard it, an attitude perhaps summed up best in the following. Music, he wrote towards the end of his life, is a science peculiarly productive of a pleasure that no state of life, public or private, secular or sacred, renders improper.
Today's Early Music Show was presented by Lucy Skeeping, with Arthur Bostrom as the voice of Samuel Pepys. The programme was produced in Manchester by Sam Phillips. Well, in tomorrow's Early Music Show, Catherine Bott will be here to continue the programme's Opera Profiles season by exploring Antonio Vivaldi's Orlando Furioso. That's at the same time tomorrow, just after the 1 o'clock news.
I am 49 years old and I'm a black taxi driver living and working in London.
From black cab to Buddhist retreat.
It feels in some ways like a bit of an avalanche of everything happening in your head. It's all moving. The point of it is to identify with how much sort of noise that goes on in your head.
How do Buddhists balance the silence of meditation with the stress of day-to-day life?
You're on the underground or you're on a bus, that mind is still there. It's just that we've forgotten it.
In a new series of Between the Ears, BBC Radio 3 joins a group of people who are taking the silence of the Sesshin to work with them. Between the Ears on BBC Radio 3. Tonight at 8:30.
Well, back to this afternoon. It's 2:01. Time now for a repeat of Monday's live Wigmore Hall concert. The presenter is Louise Fryer.
Back in April, a recital here at Wigmore Hall had to be rapidly rescheduled when a cloud of volcanic ash prevented one of the performers getting to the UK. He's the Austrian baritone Markus Ferber, and I'm happy to say that today he's had no such problems, and 6 months on, he's all ready to give his recital of Lieder by Schubert and Brahms together with the pianist Gary Matthewman. Markus Ferber comes from a musical family in southern Austria. His great-uncle was the accompanist Erich Ferber, who helped Markus embark on his singing career, which started at the Vienna Volksoper. He was a finalist in the 2003 Cardiff Singer of the World competition, and since then he's performed in opera houses all over the globe, including Covent Garden. His programme today is a sampler of songs by Schubert and Brahms, starting with Schubert, that we'll hear in two groups. The first set includes Des Sängershalbe, which suggests an artist can console himself with his art even in the face of tragedy. Der Einsame is about a recluse, happy to listen to the crickets chirping as he sits by his hearth. And the last of these first four songs returns to the theme of the artist as the ultimate creator, with Prometheus setting words by Goethe, who apparently felt Schubert was a bit too creative and that his music wasn't generally subservient enough to the text. But to start, Markus Ferber has chosen Fischerweiser, a setting of a poem by Schubert's friend, Baron von Schlechter. They were at boarding school together. It paints an idyllic picture of the life of a fisherman and how he wriggles off the hook of a sly shepherdess. And to perform these first four Schubert songs, here are Markus Ferber and Gary Matthewman.
Auf der Brücke, die Mücken schlicker, nehmt mir alle Habe gleich. Lasset mir nur meine Sitte, und ich bleibe froh und reich. Und ich bleibe froh und reich. Wenn das Grabes wollte ziehen, haucht sie Trost in meine Brust. Und aus ihrem goldenen Blühen Freundschaft brechen ihre Pflicht, kann ich meine Schulter nähren, aber meine Zitter nicht, aber meine Zitter nicht. Reiset meines Lebens Seele, wird sie mir ein Kissen sein, lullen mich die süßen Töne, letzten Schummer ein. In den Grund des Tannenhaines send mich leise dann hinein. Und statt eines Leichensteines stellt Zitter auf mein schwirren bei Nacht am später Werden hielt. Dann sitz ich mit vergnügtem Sinn vertraulich zu der Flamme hin. Dann sitz ich mit vergnügtem Sinn vertraulich zu der Flamme hin. So leicht, so unbeschwert, so leicht, so unbeschwert. Bleibt man noch gern am Feuer wach. Man schiebt